is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
The BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, meeting in South Africa in Johannesburg in these last days to grow the BRICS with ambitions. China is said to be the most ambitious of all. It wants something comparable to the G7. Statistically, it's got it. The G7, I believe, is about 10% of the Earth's population. The BRICS, as conceived now, is 47% of the Earth's population. I welcome Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Affairs, to talk about the BRICS, not only for the addition of the six states, but for what it means to two of those states in particular, Ethiopia and Egypt. Gregory has been my guide to understand that the Ethiopian crisis of these last months and years, the so-called civil war, is part of a larger regional conflict between Egypt and Ethiopia having to do with the Nile River Valley. Very practical. It's about water, the resource that humanity must have. At the same time, now that both Egypt and Ethiopia are welcomed into the BRICS, it's a built-in tension. There's other tensions. For example, Iran and Saudi Arabia and the UAE are invited in, and they're at odds, profound odds, have been for years. Argentina is added despite its debt load, but we're going to concentrate on Ethiopia and Egypt. Gregory, a very good evening to you. Ethiopia was, for quite some time, you report, in the American orbit. It no longer is in the American orbit. What happened, and what is the addition? What does Ethiopia's addition to BRICS mean for Addis Ababa? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, yes, Ethiopia was in the Western orbit, particularly the U.S. orbit, since about 1944, when the great meetings between the U.S. president and Emperor Haile Selassie occurred. Haile Selassie, of course, was very much supportive of and supported by the United Kingdom for the years before that. And it was the alliance between the UK, the Commonwealth forces, and the Ethiopian Patriot forces, which achieved the first great victory of World War II, namely defeating the Italians who had occupied large parts of Ethiopia. And so this was the first great victory of World War II in that they drove an Axis occupying power out of occupied territory. That was overshadowed, of course, by the Pearl Harbor attack in December 1941. So we haven't heard much about it. But since that time, and right up until Jimmy Carter, the U.S. and Ethiopia were in harmony. From the Carter administration onwards, however, Ethiopia was gravely neglected, enabling the emperor to be overthrown by ultimately Marxist forces of the Derg in 1974, and so on. So it just went downhill from there. The U.S. had the opportunity to get back into influence in 2018 when the last of the communist powers were overthrown in Ethiopia. Even in 1990, the U.S. had the chance to rebuild relations with Ethiopia, and did so in a funny sort of way because of the collapse of the Soviet Union, which removed Soviet aid to Ethiopia. But essentially, Washington has not understood the geopolitical importance of Ethiopia as one of the great controlling elements of the Red Sea Suez sea lane, one of the most important sea lanes in the world. And the U.S., essentially allowed Ethiopia to be broken up so that Eritrea split off and controlled the coastal region of what once was Ethiopia. And ultimately, Ethiopia was seen by some political players in Washington as just a cash cow. They supported the communist government of Meles Zenawi during the Obama administration, so that the Obama administration could get access to airfields in southern Ethiopia for drone raids on jihadist groups in Somalia, for example. But what happened was that that Washington poured large amounts of money into the Meles Zenawi government, which was the government of the Tigray Popular Liberation Front, a Marxist extremist group. And ultimately, when the TPLF government collapsed and they fled with billions of dollars, many billions of dollars, they were funding politicians in Washington. So we saw this unhealthy relationship continue where the Obama and Clinton people had funded the TPLF, and then later the TPLF started funding some of these politicians in Washington as lobbyists when they were not in office. And so you really got a distorted view of from Washington of the Horn of Africa rather than a geopolitical view which would look after U.S. and Western interests, and that's prevailed. So when this civil war got out of hand with the TPLF, now in opposition, Washington supported the TPLF, which lost the civil war there, but they alienated the Addis Ababa government, and ultimately, by threatening the national government of Ethiopia, which post-communist, they drove the Addis Ababa government into the arms of new suitors, and those suitors were Russia, People's Republic of China, and Turkey in particular, but also Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. So the U.S. is nowhere to be seen in this mix. The U.S. is still putting in a fair amount of food aid into Ethiopia, but Ethiopia is now becoming independent as and a producer of surpluses in grain. So it's basically getting less and less dependent on the outside world for food aid. So right now, Ethiopia is back in the grip of another round of civil war because Prime Minister Abiy has not been wise in what he's been doing there. He's been playing one ethnic group off against another. But the U.S. is not in a position to influence that and had supported Egypt in blaming Ethiopia for the water shortages in Egypt.
Yes, I want to talk about this because they're coming into BRICS together.
Well, yes, Ethiopia and Egypt are at odds, and they have been at odds on and off for the past couple of hundred years. This time it's over the control of the Nile waters. But let's face it, within that whole BRICS community, there are numerous mutual oppositions. India and the People's Republic of China, for example, is a key one, and Egypt and Ethiopia is clearly another. The reality is that the BRICS mechanism and the superpowers behind it, Russia and the PRC, are unlikely to interfere overtly between Ethiopia and Egypt. They certainly wouldn't encourage a conflict. They may even be able to alleviate it. But even President Sisi of Egypt doesn't want to go to war with Ethiopia. He knows that the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam, which has been blamed for stealing Egyptian waters, is doing nothing of the sort. The reality is that the Egyptian population has more or less quadrupled since the era of President Nasser in the late 1950s. The population of Cairo has increased sevenfold since that time, and cities like Cairo are very much more water users than the rural areas, despite the need of farmers for water. So you've got this situation now where President Sisi, coming up for an election next year, essentially needed somebody to blame for the problems of Egypt. So he blamed Ethiopia, threatened war. There was a lot of maneuvering. The reality is that he's not concerned about attacking Ethiopia over the water issue, because it's like killing the goose that laid the golden egg. You can destroy Ethiopia, but it's not going to give you any more water coming out of the headwaters of the Blue Nile at Lake Tana. Certainly, Egypt has always wanted to keep Ethiopia on the sidelines of controlling the Red Sea Suez Sea Lane, because that sea lane provides Egypt with a huge amount, at one stage up to 50% of its foreign exchange earnings from ships passing through the Suez Canal. Not quite the same proportion now, but still critically important, and it is the hallmark of Egypt's strategic power, the control of the Suez Canal and therefore the Red Sea. So it does have a rivalry with Ethiopia. But if we look at the overall rivalries within the BRICS members, old and new, they don't really matter a lot, because BRICS is not there to be a strategic power block. It's there to be an economic region, and all of the BRICS members are looking for new markets and new ways to leverage their assets so that they can sell and trade on the world market, knowing that their currencies are weak. But the reality is they've been damaged to a large extent by U.S. what I would call dollar overreach in recent years. Russia and China in particular have been angered by the fact that the United States can seize their assets just because those assets were somehow acquired or denominated in U.S. dollars. So the pushback is BRICS is really to break dollar domination, if you like, of the world marketplace. And these BRICS members now, they're not opposed to dealing in dollars or dealing with the U.S. or the West, but they are looking for ways in which they can trade using their natural resources in a barter or counter-trade configuration. I think most of them would be very careful about taking yuan from China, given the economic implosion of China. But they will do it on occasion to get Chinese goods in exchange for their own raw materials or manufacturers.
I want to talk about China when we come back, and Maoism and Xi Jinping. Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. I'm John Donahoe.